accession number 20362, reel 6.
Tom Cattle, reel 6.
We knew the Japs were now pulling back quite quickly. There obviously their supply lines had been stretched to the limit, and they were in a precarious position, really. You came across them, they just died where they were. And as we pushed on towards Mandalay, we knew that this was a defended city, but it was a race between the 19th Division and our 2nd Division as to who was going to get there first. And then we realised, of course, that the 19th Division were going to get there first. And anyway, by now we were making more use of our tanks and were riding on them to try and push forward, because the ground was such that the tanks could be used more. And so our advance was much more faster, and we could cover the ground quicker. Just on the outskirts of Mandalay, we knew that the 19th Div was there because of the gunfire that was going on and the planes that were coming in and bombing. And anyway, we got on the outskirts of Mandalay, and we managed to get on some tanks there and went on through. But by the time we got into the centre, it was obviously all over. The 5.5s of the 19th Div had battered down. It was quite a fortress, Mandalay. There was a fort in Mandalay, and it was surrounded by a high wall, and these walls had to be breached to get into the centre. And these were breached with the... this was the first time I'd seen them. Where they came from, I don't know. But they were huge guns, and they were 5.5s, I understand. And anyway, we managed to get there and in time to see the 19th Div Commander, General Reeves, I think his name was, holding up the flag, the British flag, in the centre of the town. Anyway, we didn't stay. We pulled back out, and the Japs had obviously pulled back, and we dug in just outside Mandalay to reorganise and I suppose for the commander to decide what was going to happen next. And then during the night, all hell was let loose. The Japs obviously had pulled back all their guns, and they pulled back and were firing them, either getting rid of their ammunition or something. And we took quite a few casualties here, because there was a lot. They were firing 75s, 105s, and goodness knows what. And we took quite a few casualties there. Anyway, as I said, the Japs were pulling back quite quickly now, and we were advancing on down. We were heading now to I don't know, there was no real town that I can remember, but we were heading on down now to a place called, the next place that I can remember was Mount Poppa. Peculiar name, but it was called Mount Poppa. It was high ground. And anyway, we went on down, and our next operation really was some Japs who were pulling out, and we put in an ambush on the road. And it was just outside of Mount Poppa, and we put in this ambush, and we could see the Jap trucks coming down through with supplies and what have you for their troops. And it was at night, and they had their lights on, and they obviously didn't know we were in the vicinity. And we put in this ambush alongside the road, and they drove straight into it. And of course they were, you know, the trucks were shot up, and the Japs were killed. Some of them got away, obviously, but it was a most successful ambush, and a lot of them were, a lot of Japs were killed there. Anyway, we now got to a position where we were being shelled again from Mount Popper, but they obviously got some heavy guns there, and so we decided that we were going to have to dig in here. And here again, it was an infantryman's nightmare, really, hard rock, to try and dig down into a rock, to dig out a slip trench for protection. So here again, it was mainly you had to build up to get a bit of protection and lie down behind it. And it was here that they started to shell us, and of course we weren't really prepared. I mean, you're never really prepared when they start to shell. And the only thing is you've got to get under cover or some means of protection as soon as possible. Well, they started to shell us with these guns, and I jumped into my little bit of a dugout that I'd dug out, and I fell heavily on my, I think it was my right ankle, and I thought I'd broken the bone. I couldn't move. I thought, oh, goodness me, whatever am I going to do now? And anyway, it turned out to be badly twisted. I couldn't walk, and anyway, it wasn't long, I don't know, it was the next day, I think, that they obviously had got an L5 organized, and it flew in on a short, they cleared a short strip of land, and it flew in, and they put me on a stretcher and laid me out in this, oh, it's most peculiar, in this little L5, Lysander it was, L5 they called them. And I was lying on the stretcher and looking up to the sky on the back of this little plane, and they flew me and to hospital, because we were, you know, we were well down now into Burma, and the advance was going quite fast, and they decided then that they would pull the 2nd Division out and fly them back to India. Anyway, I was flown out straight away back to whether it was either Camilla or somewhere like that, somewhere back that they flew me into a hospital and treated me. And I understood from there that the battalion had been flown out by Dakota back to Calcutta, and the intention, as I understood it, was that from there. We were to be reinforced and take part in amphibious landings farther into the Pacific, because the Burma now was almost taken back, and they were going to do some landings with divisions up through as far as Japan, the final one on to Japan. And so our division, for the time being, were to rest, and that's where I joined them in Calcutta, again, at a place just outside of Calcutta, I can't remember the name of it, but they flew into Dum Dum Airport at Calcutta, and we went on leave then, and here again, we went a little bit wild on leave in Calcutta, and I got wet one night. I got soaking wet through going back to our billets, and then on the move, we were moving the next day by train back down to Secunderabad from Calcutta, and we got on the train, battalion and trained, and we got as far as Cuttack, and I was taken ill. I was pretty ill.
What with?
Pneumonia. So I was taken off the train there and put into a hospital at Cuttack. I was the only white person. There were white sisters there, but I was the only white soldier there. Anyway, I got over it eventually and joined the battalion. I think it was back down into Secunderabad. in sort of more central India there. And it was here, of course, that I'd heard about the atom bomb. Thank goodness it had been dropped, and the war ended, and that was the end of it. And how thankful I was, because I'd been abroad now for a couple of years. I've been away from home, and I was beginning to wonder whether or not I was ever going to get back to see my wife and family again. Especially when they were talking about amphibious landings, and I could see more difficulties here. And of course, when they said that they'd dropped the atom bomb, everybody was so thankful that this had happened, although in retrospect, I suppose, it was perhaps a little bit callous, because I don't know, it was either them or us. I mean, we were, if we'd gone on these amphibious operations, the casualties would have been terrific, not only for us but for the Americans as well, because they suffered so many casualties on their landings, and so we were very pleased that the war had ended. And I thought perhaps now I should get home. But of course, I'd only done 2 years, whereas the rest of the division, who'd gone out in 1942, were now coming up to their 3 years. And so it meant that I still had another year to go, because at that time, the service abroad, you had to serve 3 years and before you came home. And so they decided that they would now repatriate the main of the 2nd Division, who had gone out in 42. And this they did. We went to a place called Camaretti, and here the battalion split up. The people who come out in 42 were sent back home. And the Dorsets and Camerons and Worcesters of the 5th Brigade were now going to take in reinforcements, and they were going to make a brigade of British troops to go to Japan on occupation duties. It was going to take a long time, and what they wanted was a British battalion, which was the Dorsets, the Camerons, which were the Scottish regiment, and the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, which were the Welsh regiment. They were going to have one of each regiment to make up the brigade to go on occupational duties in Japan. And this is what was happening. And of course, the Dorsets, as the other battalions, I mean, were stripped down really naked, because they had to start from scratch and build up the battalion again. Most of my friends who I joined with obviously went into the, I suppose, easier part of the battalion, which was the motor platoon. I wanted to go with them, but they wouldn't let me. They insisted on making me a full corporal and continue in the battalion as a corporal. I don't know, but people used to say, well, you know, if you're made a full corporal on active service, which we were still on active service, then you become a King's Corporal. But I've never really been able to ascertain whether or not that is what they call a King's Corporal or not. But as I say, I was made a full corporal, and later on I was made up to acting Lance Sergeant, and went to Japan as such on occupation duties. By now, we'd reached a period of time in March 1945.
46?
No, 1945, I think it was.
Because VJ Day was August 1945.
Oh, yes, well, that's right, yes. 46, yes, sorry.
Whereabouts in Japan were you?
We went to Japan on a troop ship called the Cheshire, landed at Kure on April, no, we came into Kure in April 1946 on the 23rd. My birthday was on April the 24th when we landed in Kure, and I was one of the escorts. The commanding officer intended that the Dorsets should land with the bands playing and the flags flying, you know, quite a bit of bull, you know, and anyway, it was pouring with rain when we were to land, so all that had to be cancelled, and all we did was to march the colours off, and I was one of the escorts to the colours, which is the King's colour and the regimental colour, and we marched along the quayside with these colours. But it wasn't the parade that the CO intended. But anyway, we didn't hang around there long. We stopped at a place called Hiro, which was just outside of Hiroshima, where the bomb had dropped. And it was a sad and sorry sight there, the people and what have you. But we didn't stay there long before we moved. We were always on the move. We never stopped anywhere very long.
What was the condition of the people at Hiro?
Oh, it was terrible. They were terrible. It was really horrible to see them. It was. They were so cowed and frightened. And the clothing, and they were all trying to get clothes and blankets and things like this. They'd obviously lost everything. And anyway, we didn't stay there very long, and we moved on up to a place called Matsu, which was quite a nice small town it was, and we thought we were going to spend our time there on occupational duties, but we were there in not very long, but we must have been there in May, because the CO decided that on the Battle of Kohima assault on the 13th of May, he was going to have a big parade. And of course, by now we were transformed from wartime soldiers to peacetime soldiers, and here we are now with blanco white on equipment and what have you, you know. And we still had our green, battle green shirts and shorts. We were wearing shorts at this time and bush hats. And then we transferred, of course, to the beret type of headgear. But at when we were at Matsu on the 13th of May, the old CEO decided he was going to have a big parade for a Kohima Day to show the victorious army, and he did. He had horses for him and his adjutant. They were on horses, and there were couriers out in front of the band, and the band was playing, and we marched through with colors flying and the whole battalion. And the whole of the town were ordered to turn out to see this parade, and it was quite something. Anyway, we didn't stop in Matsu all that long before we were sent on to the island of Shikoku, to a place called Gomen. The Americans had moved out of that into the more a more popular area, sort of like Tokyo and all the big towns, and leaving the Australians, New Zealanders and us in the smaller places. And we took up residence in an Air Force, well, it was a kamikaze aerodrome, and it was a two-story building there. And we took up residence there, and of course we were back to peacetime soldiering now, and patrols out, demilitarization, and there was a lot of black market going on that we were supposed to be stopping and all this. And
what did the black market consist of?
Well, everything, food, because they were so short and desperate for everything, you see. Obviously, they were in a very poor state.
So why were you supposed to be stopping it?
Why? Well, because it was so intensive, the black market, that it had to be stopped. And there was a lot of people coming in from Korea, I think it was, into Japan as well, that they wanted to stop the illegal immigration into Japan. But the main thing was the discovering where the ammunition dumps were and getting them destroyed in that. A lot of my time was spent, I seemed to be doing a lot of battalion duties as battalion orderly sergeant and things like that, peacetime soldiering. It wasn't long after we got to Goman that they decided that the Dorset should go to Tokyo and do occupational duties in conjunction with the Americans. And so it wasn't long before we found ourselves in Tokyo. To start with, we went to a place that had been bombed. It was a horrible billets we had there called Ebisu. And the billets were terrible, but we didn't stay there very long. Again, we were moving on again into the center of Tokyo, where we were billeted with the Americans, which we were attached to them. And of course, we were living like lords. I mean, we were dining in lovely places, and the bands were playing while we were dining. But it was a little bit difficult because we were doing 48-hour guards, continuous 48-hour guards on, and 4 days off we were getting. It was more 2 days on and 4 days off, you see, and it was continuous like that. And there were quite a lot of there was the Imperial Palace and Pacific Air Command, and we were sharing duties with the Americans. But it was quite an experience, and we at one period of time we trooped the colour on the plaza of the Imperial Palace, which was quite something. We had the colours there, and all the dignitaries, all the American generals, my goodness, it was quite something to take part in that. And that's the only trooping of the colour that I've ever taking part in. I was there for 6 months, and of course by this time I'd been abroad for 3 years, and so they thought they'd better send me home, and so I came back home, thank goodness, safe and sound.
Did you ever find any arms or ammunition?
I didn't,
Japan?
No, because as I say, my duties were mainly battalion duties. And I didn't get out on any patrols at all.
Did anybody find?
Oh yes, there were quite a lot. Oh yes.
How did the troops get on with the Japanese population?
Well, it was very difficult, really, because obviously the menfolk were very, what can I say? They didn't take to the British, well, I don't think they took to any of the occupation troops at all. But of course, the ladies were a different kettle of fish. They and the children. I think this is the thing that stood out most in my mind was the friendliness of the children. They were willing to sort of fraternize, whereby although we had no fraternization order within the brigade, obviously it was carried on as men and ladies will do, but I found that the children were the most interesting people of all, because they were so friendly, and they would speak and help you and try and speak the language, you know. Yes, it was most. I, although I wanted to get home, it was quite an interesting 6 months as far as I was concerned, because I didn't know anything really about the Japanese culture at all, except that we had to kill them in Burma, and that was our main outlook on life, is to get rid of them. The country of Japan was beautiful. It was a lovely country when you got out in the countryside. I wouldn't say the towns, because the towns are like every town. They're crowded and hustle and bustle and full of commerce. Whereas out in the country, these are the true Japanese people, I think, because they are true country folk.
In what sense?
Well, they were so friendly, you know, and they would take you into their homes, and you could talk to them, you know, but it was very difficult because the language was so difficult. Although they gave us books and what have you, it was very difficult to pick up the language.
How do you feel now about having served in the Dorsets in the Second World War?
Well, it was something I wouldn't have chosen, I don't think, really. It was a matter of I had no choice. We had to go and serve our country, and this is what we did.
When you were in Burma, did you ever have any Japanese air attack?
Oh yes, when we were at Zuba, when we got there first of all, when we were guarding the guns, we were attacked by Zeros, machine gunned and bombed there, because obviously they were trying to get at the guns, and of course we were amongst them, but. We were well dug in, and so we didn't take any casualties as I can remember there. But on the advance down through Burma, I can't remember where it was, but we were still being supplied obviously by Dakotas, and I can remember seeing two Dakotas shot down, and it was so heartbreaking to see these planes that were helping us, you know, and bringing us in supplies, and here they were defenseless, and as they came in to drop their supplies, so they were shot down by the Japanese Zeros. Two of them were shot down in front of our eyes, and it was heartbreaking, really, because they had no chance, none at all.